Yeah! There it is! When that robot voice comes in, you know it is time to begin! And wherever you are, whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening, we're so glad you've chosen to tune in to
ELC.
Especially if you're one of our geeks and sneaks, using this podcast to power you through a workout or a run. Or hey, maybe you're frolicking through fresh snow. Maybe you're huddled in your house next to the fire, staying away from said snow. Whatever the case, we're going to be in your ear holes for 90 plus minutes of gaming goodness. Because DLC is your downloadable commentary for the week, delivered the way we love it to be. And that is completely free, thanks to our patrons at patreon.com/DLCpod. They bring the show to you. Their generosity, their support means we get to make these. And we got some new patrons in the new year. We're so glad. Thank you for joining the cause. Thank you for believing that we provide some value to your life, and you in return give us some value at patreon.com/DLCpod. You also get some cool perks as a patron, including ad-free versions of the show, video versions of the show on demand, and a whole bunch of bonus content, including the ad-free part. The bonus content part is even more exciting. You got The Feeling This Show with Alex Solman and Christian Spicer talking about the feelings behind video games. You got bonus chats with developers. You've got the Wednesday paid DLC program with Lana Bashinsky joining Christian Spicer and myself talking about all the fun things that the patrons want to talk about. Good times. Great oldies. I'm the oldie. But this show, the main show, DLC, it's the show all about games in their many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles. Also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I'm your host, Jeff Cannata. This spelled the two N's and one T. And I am joined, as always, by my friend, slash co-host, slash nemesis. The guy who's not a developer, but he's always direct. Mr. Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
So I'm going to provide a deep dive into the making of this podcast. And so we're going to do some really cool shots of the studio. We have some cool B-roll of the studio. People sitting at computers.
No, We don't. Our studio is
you see
impressive
it.
Looking.
I mean, the VODs look impressive. I have fun with these.
Right. Yes, they do.
Hello, Jeff. Hello, everyone. And also, I should say, the emails will be going out shortly, but congrats to our diaper baby, our secret diaper baby. New sub. What was it? New year, new sub.
New year, new subs. Yeah.
New year, new subs. Patreon giveaway.
Generous benefactor that has gifted some new subs, some new patrons. It's just awesome. Hopefully those folks will find enough value and they'll stay on as patrons. We are so excited. Our patron numbers have grown at the beginning of the year, and it's just a delight to see. Thank you, folks. And thank you, benefactor.
Yeah. So those emails will be going out shortly. If you're listening to this and they haven't already gone out, they were going out very soon. So thank you to everybody that emailed. We got them, ran it through a random number generator, and I will get those emails out very, very soon.
We have a big show for you. As I mentioned, there was a big developer direct. We got some games that we've been playing, some really exciting games to talk about. And we have the perfect guest to dive into this with. You know, the DLC always stands for your downloadable Kanata and your downloadable Christian. But this week, I'm excited because DLC stands for dead and lacking cogency, because that's how you might describe an insipid ghost. And we have the host of the Xbox Expansion Pass, the insipid ghost himself, Luke Lore, joining us once again. Hey, Luke, how are you?
I'm fantastic. I appreciate the invitation. I appreciate the description and the intro. I hope you guys are doing well, man. This is an absolute pleasure.
Well, we're delighted to have you. And as somebody who's focused squarely on Xbox, we got a pretty big week of Xbox news. So let's jump in and start the show the way we always do, with Story of the Week.
Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happen in the world of games this week. You can always submit stories for our consideration by sending us an email to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. That's a great place to reach out for any reason. If you want to tell us what you think, ask a question, whatever you do, we're there for you. DLCfeedback@gmail.com. It's not the only way to reach out. You can also hang out in our Discord, which is 5x5 DLC on Discord. Great folks hanging out in our Discord. Join them. Become one. Test the waters. But Luke, you are our guest, so you get first pick of stories. What would you consider to be your story of the week?
I mean, is the Developer Direct overall the story of the week?
Let's do it. Yeah, the Xbox Developer Direct, which just happened. Four big games in the spotlight, as they are wont to do. And as Christian kind of mentioned, we're looking at them through the lens of the developers. I love how Xbox does this and has been doing it for a while now, where they focus on the people and sort of the environments and the places and locations. You really get a sense of the human beings that are involved in making games. And I love that. Three games we knew about, one big surprise. Luke, of the four games, of course, we had Doom the Dark Ages. We had Clair Obscur, the Expedition 33. We had South of Midnight. And the big surprise was Team Ninja revealing Ninja Gaiden 4. Which of those games do you want to start with? Which was the most exciting to you?
Oh, man, that's like picking your favorite kid, because I went into this showcase beyond excited, as it were, because I knew that I would get to see Doom the Dark Ages, something that I'm just very fond of, and then also South of Midnight. Very excited for that. So let's start with Doom the Dark Ages. That's how they capped off the show. I think that was kind of their big finale finish, and a lot of questions coming out about Doom the Dark Ages. I know for me, it was really great to kind of get the release date, first of all, and that, to their whole credit across the show, release dates were something that they had for us. They answered questions, which doesn't always happen at a showcase. They answered questions more than they provided them. So I was really pleased with that. And let's start with Doom.
Yeah, May 15th is the release date. I agree with you. I love the way you frame that, because you're right. Often these things are all about raising questions. Oh, how much is it going to be? When is it coming out? What about this feature? What about that thing? It's just a tease. Oh, it's just a CG trailer. What does actual gameplay look like? And I agree with you that this was really about showing the games in action, giving us release dates. Also providing the fact that, hey, these are all coming to Game Pass day one, which is pretty cool for Game Pass subscribers like myself.
But also what other platforms they'll be, which I think is worth noting and mentioning. If you're in the Xbox Pantheon, we've had questions. Is this game coming to another platform? Is it going to PlayStation or whatnot? They answered that, which allows us to focus on the game versus the question of, you know, wait, is PlayStation getting it? Are they not? And now with that question removed in so many cases, we can just focus on our excitement, which is fantastic to me. It's a much improved bit of messaging on Xbox.
Yeah, it turns out that answer is yes. Yes, it's coming to PlayStation almost across the board here, I'm curious what your feelings are as a Xbox aficionado. But let's talk about Doom, the Dark Ages, because they showed a lot of it. This was the sort of deep dive game. I guess they were fairly deep on all the games, but I think this one got the most time and certainly showed a ton of gameplay. They talked about three major pillars of the game, which is, you know, the action, the story, and the exploration. Looks like there's going to be a lot of melee combat, three different melee weapons, this shield, this chainsaw shield that is a big part of the new Doom. And they talked about the game being heavier, a big contrast to Doom Eternal, which was a bunch of jump shooting and flying around. This one is weightier, and you're grounded, and you're blocking attacks. Tell me what you thought of what they showed for Dark Ages.
I thought Dark Ages looked fantastic. It's been really neat, I think, to watch kind of this simultaneous growth of the boomer shooter, right? The return of the boomer shooter. I will selfishly plug that I interviewed John Romero mere hours after this and put that up. But seeing the boomer shooter's return while simultaneously watching Doom 2016, Doom Eternal, and now Doom the Dark Ages grow in popularity and find ways to remain true to that formula, but expand on it. In Doom Eternal, we saw that that grapple hook, and we saw the kind of those boss fights of sorts where you were dodging and going into attack. When I saw Doom the Dark Ages combat, I'll freely admit to being a little taken aback, because suddenly I'm parrying, I'm going in with melee weapons, and I'm timing things, and it felt a little, I guess you would say, detached from the standard Doom formula of old. However, when I look at it in progression from Doom Eternal and Doom 2016, it looks quite natural. So I had a bit of a dichotomy of feeling there, just in like looking at the two. And then, of course, you get to see that you're flying around on demons and such, and you're doing other things that the Doom franchise.
Giant mech. Yeah.
Yeah, the giant mech was really cool because it was introduced in previous games, but you never played in it. And for anyone that hasn't played or seen Doom Eternal's DLC, go check that DLC out, because it is impressive, and you see those mechs really on display. To loop back to the core question, I was really encouraged by it, but I definitely noted that this is a different or evolutionary take on that run and gun formula. So it stood out to me, but I still remain excited. It remains my most anticipated of the year.
They were keen to reiterate the fact that they want to push this franchise forward. And they kept saying evolution and, you know, not resting on their laurels, not just giving you the same thing over and over, that each of these games that they've been doing for a decade now of the sort of new era of Doom has tried to reimagine what the fundamental gameplay style is, while also remaining true to the sort of spirit of this fast-paced, you know, ultra-violent, ultra-intense boomer shooters. And I give them a lot of credit for thinking of a new angle here. Christian Spicer, Doom the Dark Ages, what was your feeling seeing all this extended gameplay?
I like a lot of what they showed. I love Doom 2016. We gushed about it a bunch on this show. Doom Eternal, I did not like as much. I did not really click with the flying around, the grapple, the jumping based style of combat. I feel like it overly complicated a formula that worked really well for me in Doom 2016. I get the team wanting to make changes, and I applaud them for trying something new and not just making, when did Doom Eternal come out? 2018. Not just making Doom 2016 Part two, you know, like the next exact version of that, but it didn't click with me the same way. And so I feel like that was the case for more than just me. And it seems like Doom the Dark Ages is walking back some of that criticism around Doom Eternal while also doing something new. They're not just going straight back to Doom 2016, but they are, I think, taking some of that feedback from Doom Eternal and getting rid of the, I mean, to some extent, Unreal Tournament feel that Doom Eternal had in my eyes, of just being so frenetic in terms of the vertical axis in addition to the old school strafing style combat. And in this presentation, they talked about how they're leaning into the strafing style combat that OG Doom made famous back at the beginnings of first person shooters. So I think that looks great. And I think there are some sales data to back that up. Doom Eternal outsold Doom 2016 by a large magnitude over its first month. But after that, the sales for Doom Eternal tapered off, where I believe to date, Doom Eternal has sold less than Doom 2016. And I think part of that was it didn't connect with folks the same way that Doom 2016 did in the long run. It got a big boost initially. Everybody was super excited. And then it kind of tapered a bit. I am curious, though, Jeff, how this contextual chainsaw shield is going to work. I found that very interesting.
I agree.
The premise is it's one button and it does what you want it to do. You know, it does all sorts of different things, same weapon, but based on the in-game context, what it does is different, whether it's a shield or it shoots out or all the various things that this weapon can do. And if it works, it's kind of like good sound design in a movie. No one will notice it.
Right.
But if it doesn't do the thing you want it to do when you want it to do it, and you don't have another control input to make it do the thing you want to do, I think that could frustrate a lot of folks, assuming Doom the Dark Ages still becomes as combat heavy as other games in the franchise.
Wow, it certainly looks that way. I mean, yes, I feel like I saw more enemies on the screen at any given time. There was sequences where they were just mauling through. It looked more like a Serious Sam or something, where it was just like dozens and dozens of bad guys.
Which, certainly wide environments as well. Like,
yeah,
you weren't in hallways. This is not Doom 3, you know?
They have specifically said that it is not going to be quote unquote open world, but it certainly looks like, you know, more of a sandbox. They use the word sandbox in the presentation. More of a, making decisions in the larger maps of where to go, what to explore, which looks really cool. I'm very curious. I agree with you, Christian. I'm very curious about the contextual. You know, they talk about one button for this, one button for that, one button for this, which I think I love how that makes sense in my brain when I'm playing. I think Doom 2016 did that really well, where it was almost like rock, paper, scissors, you know, depending on what color you see flash on the bad guy, I'm pushing a different button. And it worked. It was great. Super fun. And so I hope that hits that same groove here, but it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting. Luke, what do you think about the shield and the emphasis on parrying and all that stuff? You said you were a little, trepidatious when you first saw the footage. Are you excited to give it a shot?
Very excited to give it a shot. And I'm curious because, you know, Christian aptly mentioned that like Doom Eternal maybe didn't hit the same heights, you know, en masse among zeitgeist that people wanted it to compared to Doom 2016. And the whole theme, according to Bethesda and id, was that, you know, Doom was run and gun. Doom Eternal was jump and shoot. And I wonder if that put people off that jumping element. And so if their theme now is stand and fight, that kind of returns you back to the floor, staying on the ground. I'm wondering if that's something that they're keeping mindful of. That shield, the parry system that comes with it, if it is not simple to use, or let me rephrase that, if it is not accessible and fun, then it is a detriment. Because I think on, you know, in the trailer, man, this thing looks incredible. I'm more excited than I've ever been to go into Doom the Dark Ages. So they've only upped the level for me. The game looks great. It looks like what I expect from Doom. But I will tell you that if there's a skill ceiling that exists from a parry window in Doom, I will be very disappointed in the Doom experience. That's not to say I wouldn't love the game. That's not to say I wouldn't have a blast with it, but there is something that comes at within the spirit of being Doom. And to that end, I'm trepidatious for that respect of it. But as far as just a game standalone, this thing looks incredible. And I'm here day one, interested day one. This is a game that I'm, if the monies were there, I'd be having that collector's edition statue, right? You know what I mean? Like, that's one of those I'm excited for. Doom's in my top three favorite franchises of all time. So shield or not, I'm still excited.
Well, it's coming May 15th, PC, Xbox, and PlayStation 5, will also be on Game Pass day one. I mean,
to be clear, Game Pass Ultimate or Game Pass PC.
Yes.
Day
yes.
one.
Very important to distinguish that these days, as there are tiers where it would not be available day one. But that's funny, sad and funny. But yes, I think it's possible to have a Game Pass subscription where you get it day one. I'm very excited to play this game May 15th. We'll see more of it, I'm sure, on the way. We got more games in the mix. Christian, what was a game from the four that stood out to you?
All of them, to be honest, except for Claire Obscure, which just is not my type of game, which is fine. I think it looks very good, but that's not what I line up for. The one I want to talk about is the surprise, and that's Ninja Gaiden 4, which also lets me pull a Jeff Kanata and mention another game, you know, two for one. Not only did we get the announcement of Ninja Gaiden 4, which is coming this year, which is awesome. We love how we talk about it all the time on this show. We love that. Announce, it's out in a couple of months. Very, very cool.
Well, but also, I think it's going to be later than a couple of months. This is a fall game. So,
and don't ruin this for me, Jeff. It's going to be out very – but also, what did come out within a couple of hours was Ninja Gaiden 2 Black, which is Ninja Gaiden 2 rebuilt in Unreal Engine 5. And we will talk about this game more when we get into the playlist. So I don't want to talk about that game specifically here and now. But this, as a reveal for me, both of these games, was huge. I was just earlier this week, I got coffee with a friend and we were reminiscing about Xbox 360, PS3 era games and how so many of those games, in our opinion, feel more accessible in terms of replayability. They're not, it's not a pure arcade game the way Dreamcast era games were, but it also isn't, well, now here's the 4-hour open world section in the middle of the game where you play as a character, not as interesting. Like a lot of games now are great the first time through, but I don't think they really warrant a replay in the same way that some of these 360 PS3 games do. And here we are with looks like getting that style of game again. And I really, really hope Ninja Gaiden 4 does well and is presented well. It's a co-developed Platinum Games. I love their games. I love Bayonetta. I love the Ninja Gaiden franchise. So this for me is huge. And I hope it delivers the promise of the premise, which I think it will, because I think it'd be a little disingenuous to release Ninja Gaiden 2 Black and then come out later the year with Ninja Gaiden 4 and be like, and we changed it.
Well, it looks a little different from what they were
showing. A little different.
But yeah, you know, they're really emphasizing the speed. And man, I got to tell you, when that the turbulent sea with the lightning, that's the beginning of the Team Ninja logo, came up on the screen, I popped like a mark. There's something about that logo and the way that the sea, the churning sea, and then the lightning, and then you like zoom forward and it stops and pauses. I don't know. There's something really cool about that logo, and it has like a visceral connection to me. In fact, I got a skeet. Are we calling them skeets? I don't know. I got a blue sky post from a listener who's like, "Hey, Jeff, didn't you bring Ninja Gaiden with you when you were doing a play for months and you only brought one game with you?" And I was like, man, what a good memory, because that was many years ago. It was the original Xbox and the original Ninja Gaiden on OG big boy Xbox original with the Duke controller. And I brought it with me. I was staying at someone else's house who was putting me up while I was doing a play. And man, I just have such good memories of that and just beating my head against the wall. And Ninja Gaiden is like, hey, do you remember that there used to be challenging third-person action games that weren't Souls-likes? Like, there was a way to do this kind of challenging, very high skill level third-person action game that wasn't just aping what From Software does. Like, I have all the respect in the world for that. I know a lot of people love those games, and there's a million of them now, and it's the new way to do challenging games. And I'm, yeah, hey, you know, that's great. They're not games that I tend to love, but people do love them. But there was a way to do it differently. There was a way to do it where I didn't have to worry about a stamina bar. There was a way to do it where I could just go crazy, go nuts. And it was still challenging, and I still had to figure out things out and do things. And it wasn't what From Software has prescribed that everybody seems to want to do, which is worry about your stamina, be slow, figure out the patterns, all that stuff, and which is cool. I just love that there's, hey, remember there was a different way. And I think that way has been lost in our modern time. Luke, Ninja Gaiden 4, what did you make of the big reveal here?
I thought it was fantastic. I think among the content creator space, sometimes people pay too close attention to socials and they spoil themselves with either expectations or reading too far into leaks and such. I've been really great about avoiding doing that, leaving Twitter behind months ago and really just focusing on enjoying kind of our gaming space has let me celebrate stuff in the announce moment, and that is really cool. So when I saw this, I was thrilled. I thought the trailer was fantastic. It was beautiful. Like, I'm rewatching it as we speak now. It does look, you know, frenetic, high action, standard Ninja Gaiden gameplay, I guess you would say. And to your point about difficulty, yeah, these were really tough games back in the day. I wonder, and I dare I say, I guess in my age as I'm creeping up there, I'm kind of hoping that they offer some sort of difficulty setting, but that might be blasphemous in some ways.
Well, the previous games had difficulty settings as well.
Did they? It's been a while since I played, right? Like it has been a while. But I was thrilled. Like, truly, I was thrilled. It was nice to see this at an Xbox showcase. It was nice to see Xbox continue to work to make inroads with the Asian market, specifically the Japanese market. And so I was really happy with it overall. But the trailer looked insane. And then I think to have a wonderful shadow drop for gamers on all platforms, but also a special treat for Game Pass subscribers, really let – again, I talk about the messaging for Xbox – it really let Xbox Game Pass subscribers know, hey, we still got your back. We're here for you. You know, we've got you. You're covered on something to play now. And then everybody else, you can dive into a Ninja Gaiden experience if you want to. I was thrilled, guys. I thought this was fantastic.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. I agree. Pretty cool. And we will see more as Ninja Gaiden 4 gets closer to its release. It will also be coming to PlayStation 5 as well as PC and Xbox in the fall, and will be a day one Xbox Game Pass release. I hope this returns that series to glory and prominence. I feel like a lot of people coming out of this presentation are back onto it, and you know, having Ninja Gaiden 2 Black available, I think reminds people like, hey, these were great games. Really fun games. And we'll talk more about that, as Christian mentioned.
Can I float a random idea real quick?
Please.
I wonder, conspiracy tinfoil hat on, with games coming day and date to PC, PS5, along with certain tiers of Game Pass, I wonder if Microsoft has some incentive to price those games on other platforms a little higher than they otherwise would. Mm. Is there an incentive to price the, if you want to purchase it, version of the game a little higher than you would if you were just, that was the only way to get it. So you kind of have that, ooh, it's $50 on Steam for Ninja Gaiden 2 Black, or I could get it on Game Pass for free. I have no
evidence.
Is
that what it is on Steam? I haven't even looked. Is that the
price? Ninja Gaiden 2 Black is $50.
Wow. I'm surprised. That's higher than I would have guessed. Maybe you're right. I would have guessed it would be like a $39.95 at most, but
I don't know. And there certainly seems to be some price parity among games. Games are kind of what they cost. But as you, I think for me, that becomes part of that analysis of day one. Yeah. It's on everything, but for the subscription, it's this much and you can have it for a month.
Interesting.
I don't know. Just a thought.
The game that I think came out of this most excited about is the game Christian was least excited about is Expedition 33, the Claire Obscure game. Holy moly, does this look like what I wish Final Fantasy was still doing? It looks gorgeous, first of all. Fascinating world that it seems to they seem to have created that really has its own identity. I love the fiction behind this. It's so different and interesting. It feels like something I would read in a fantasy novel, you know, where this deity, this crazy titan paints a number on this building and the number gets lower every year and everybody above that number age-wise is killed. And so people are going to go and attack that titan to stop this process. What a cool concept. And man, this combination of turn-based combat with some real-time I mean, it's very much like a super high fidelity version of, you know, Mario RPG. It's like, you know, queue up your menued attack and then have to put button presses as it's happening to accentuate it in some way or dodge attacks that are coming at you in some way. But I love that stuff. I love that stuff. The game looks so slick. I am just, I loved the first reveal of this game. I've been anticipating it, but seeing more of it and really seeing the passion behind the team, you know, this is the first game coming from Sandfall Interactive, this French studio. And it really seems like this is a labor of love for them. I think this studio has a lot of promise. if this game is as good as it seems, I think this is going to be a real top tier developer for Microsoft going forward. And man, I just came away so thrilled. This is coming soon. April 24th, it will be released. Also on PlayStation 5, same situation, PC, Xbox, and Game Pass. But man, this one, if I could only pick one game from this four, this is the game I would choose. Luke, what was your takeaway from Expedition 33?
So this is in no way my kind of game, right? I'm not interested per se in this genre. Expedition 33 is doing something though that is making me more interested than I think I otherwise would have been, right? Had this not been a part of an Xbox Direct, had this just been a trailer, I don't think I would have really paid much mind to it, to be honest. But from what I'm watching and what I'm seeing and what I'm reading about the game, this is a small team that appears to be punching above its weight. And it's very hard not to root for that, right? It's very hard not to root for that. Not to mention a new IP, of course. And so I would say that I'm interested on a surface level, anxious to check it out. If there are, you know, if I get access to review opportunities, I'd be happy to cover it. But I'm not chasing this one down. But what the coolest part for me is, like, there is no way to watch this trailer and not be impressed with the art style, with the care and the love that's been put into this. And then to watch the Dev Direct presentation, to not root for these guys. Like, yeah. they are a small team that's doing something big and amazing. And so I'm glad that this game is getting the attention it's getting. And so for it to not be of my standard style or interest, I should say my standard interest, yes, this game looks great. And bravo to all involved in showcasing it and presenting it this way, because I'm more excited than I think I ever would have been. I will say the April and May releases are mounting.
Yeah.
And it's like, when and how, guys? Because, you know, to deviate ever so slightly from the Direct, they've already, like, Avowed is on the horizon for Xbox, and then you've got our next game that we'll likely talk about. Doom is in May, plus all the other third-party stuff. It's just, there's not enough time, and what a cool problem that Xbox now has too many games that it's working with.
Yeah, the does look like a stacked year for Microsoft Game Studios, which is pretty exciting to see. We have more, including the fourth of these games, coming up right after these messages. All right, South of Midnight was the fourth game from this developer Direct, a game we knew about. It's coming from Compulsion Games, the folks that made We Happy Few. My goodness, does the art style of this captivate me. I am just completely enamored with the look of this game, the world building of this game. It's got this Southern American folklore style to it. This it's pulling from a really different, I think, lore than a lot of other games are trying, and doing it with a visual style that does seem to draw from what Compulsion Games has done before. It does have that sort of elongated, stylized We Happy Few look to it, but with a new flair. And I, honestly, as I came away from South of Midnight, I started to worry that they are going too hard, too far, because, you know, as much as I am a fan of how this game looks and the world that it seems to be set in, I'm worried that the, you know, this, you know, animating on the threes, like the style that we saw popularized in the Spider-Verse movies, and even with the latest Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie. A lot of movies are kind of picking up on this style. Even Puss in Boots used it. Using it in a video game, I think, is really risky, because it can look just like your computer isn't, or your console isn't, rendering all the frames. It looks like you may be having a stutter issue rather than this stylized thing. I don't know. Luke, do you think I'm off base there?
I think that you're worry is worth acknowledging, but you don't need to be as concerned as perhaps you are, because I too felt that same way initially. But then to watch the game in motion, a lot of my worries were alleviated. And to know also that you can turn that off, tweak that off. My understanding is that that is a toggle.
Oh, I did not know that. Oh, that's cool. Okay. Interesting.
That is my understanding. If I'm incorrect, I hope somebody will politely correct me in the comments or the like. But my understanding is you can turn that off because I don't enjoy that style as well. Like I find it choppy and a little bit difficult to track. And then I'll even say it gives me a mild headache. But once I've seen gameplay where it's in full flow, I'm all in. I think the Southern Gothic approach has yet to be explored properly in game and film, for that matter, in terms of popular like mainstream stuff. I adore Hazel as a character. I truly do. I really love this. I love that I'm getting to see, I guess you would say, like a fantasy world that I'm unfamiliar with. Mm. And I really liked the platforming. And I'm anxious and hopeful that this is Compulsion's coming out party is a detriment to the great experiences they've already made. But this game feels more mainstream than their previous outings. And I hope it puts them on a map in a new way. I'll also note real quick that I'm a big fan of the scope here. Avowed, which I mentioned, on the smaller side of what could be a bloated universe. Right? We see so many open world games that are in fantasy worlds bloated. South of Midnight looks to be a more contained experience, which I'm here for. I like that idea. And so if this is a direction that Xbox is going to be going, that in those more contained but beautifully stylized games, I love it. And the last thing I'll just say on this one, support this game because I think it's doing something that we don't see enough of in terms of representation and exploring new fantasies. I'm just all in favor of it. And I think that combat and traversal looks awesome.
Yeah, Christian, this developer direct was the first time we'd really seen the combat. We'd seen some of the fun traversal stuff that a game looks like it will have. But noting that Hazel is this weaver and that all of the weapons and abilities are kind of built around a sort of old school loom and actual textile methodologies, I thought was interesting. But I'm curious what you thought of seeing the combat in action.
It looked cool, and I'm very excited to play it. I think that's where it's going to succeed or fail in how it actually plays. I mean, to some extent, it looks like it has a little bit of DMC, Ninja Gaiden. Again, that fast, large bosses, fast action combat in moments, big enemy encounters.
I think they're describing it as a Souls-like, though. I'm
curious how it plays, because you can watch a trailer of something and be like, oh man, that looks epic. And then on the sticks, it maybe doesn't deliver the feeling you're looking for. Yeah. A couple of points on the animation. Of course, we don't have Alana here. Spider-Verse was animated, quote, on the twos.
Oh, and what I always that say means that wrong.
is that it's one image for every two frames. So if you're thinking in film and it's 24 frames per second, traditionally you'd have, Miles in a pose for two of those frames before he changes pose. So he's essentially animating 12 frames per second. And I believe in Spider-Verse, the background was 24.
Right.
And he was on the twos, and then different characters had different animations. I mentioned all of that again specifically for Spider-Verse, is that you're able to see that now in the Marvel's Spider-Man games, where if you unlock the Spider-Verse suits, you can have him animate in that fashion. And so I think the key for me there is consistency. If the game runs consistently like that and the animation is consistent across scope, I don't think it'll have any feel issues. Maybe Alex Solman and I can do a feeling this about this game when it comes out, or about that idea in general. But I think if there are other frame rate problems, that's where it becomes a bug and not a feature, right? If other things are stuttering and you're animating on the twos or whatever it is, then I think you'll have issues. But if everything else is smooth and that's kind of the intended experience, I think this will help make the game stand out. But I'm very curious, Jeff, how it feels on the stick, so to speak, because this trailer still, or this showcase still felt like a trailer in some regards, and less. With Doom, we got a deep dive of what the combat is likely going to feel like. In South of Midnight, I think we still did not get that full explanation per se.
Yeah, honestly, this one is the one that gave me the uh-oh feeling, because I'm rooting for this game. I love the aesthetic. I love the the setting, the feel of this world. You know, they said they're trying to make it look like a stop motion, which, you know, I think is a really cool target. But man, I'm a little worried looking at the combat. I'm a little worried that it will be off-putting to some folks that they're going too far afield from what feels comfortable. But if it's a toggle for that, you know, you can make it smooth looking. If it seems odd to you, maybe that'll be a bigger help for that. But I'm very anxious to play this one. It comes out April 8th. So it's another in this litany of early year, first half of the year, big hitters from Microsoft and big hitters for Game Pass.
Also known as before GTA 6. Yeah. Assuming it comes this year.
That's right. All right. So there you go. That's the Xbox Developer Direct, which I thought was a real winner all the way through, as these have almost always been. I love the way these are put together, how they're shot. The tone, the feeling, the sort of positivity and human face forward. I just think it's a great look for Microsoft, and I hope they continue it.
Jeff, may I expound on that briefly?
Sure.
I just want to note that in the content creation space, for anyone who doesn't know XEP, we love and cover games everywhere. We love and play games everywhere. We cover Xbox. And that has been a strange thing to do in the last 5 years, to watch the direction of Xbox change. But the showcase that they did this past summer was remarkably impressive to my eyes. And I really enjoyed this past summer's showcase. And then to see them follow up with this direct, it's not always easy to figure out the direction that Xbox is going, but it felt really good to see these two showcases and know that regardless of wherever Xbox is headed, they are delivering games, which they have not necessarily been able to say in the previous decade. And so that has been very interesting as a content creator who covers Xbox to watch. But then as a gamer, I feel a lot better. I don't worry about the games that I love that they've made, be it Gears, Halo, Doom, Call of Duty, whatever the popular ones are. And then to see Avowed and South of Midnight side by side. So I really want to pay compliments to those involved in bringing those showcases, because I was impressed and I was very pleased. And I have a feeling that the entity that is Xbox, the entity and umbrella that operates with them in Microsoft, they have a lot of plates to spin and juggle when it comes to messaging as they figure out directions and handhelds and multi-platform releases. But this felt like a conference for gamers, and that was really nice to see. So I just wanted to pay compliments to that, because I haven't always been able to say that. So credit where due.
Very cool. Christian Spicer, what is your story of the week?
I'm going to pull it, Jeff, and do one quick one and then another one. We don't need to spend tons of time on. But quickly, I want to acknowledge Ted Price retiring from Insomniac Games. What a career he had. We were lucky enough to interview him when we were doing our Double Jump show as part of the Nerdist Network and at UCB, and maybe even on this show, or maybe that was a Weekend Confirmed forever ago. But great interviewer, great interviewee. The games, the legacy of Insomniac Games, I think stands up there with the best of any studio. Just absolute hits.
Decent human being, nice guy from all accounts, right? Our interaction with him, he was very kind to us, but you hear from his employees, from people who have interacted with him on a professional level, nice human being, which is all too rare these days, it seems. It's certainly in positions of authority.
And great periods of creativity.
Yeah.
And trying new interesting things. Insomniac's VR games, I think, still stand out as some of the coolest and most innovative for when they came out, and what they've done with Ratchet and now their Marvel game. So I didn't want this week's show to go by without mentioning that, and I hope whatever he does next, whether it's fishing, painting, or just playing more games, I hope he's very happy and satisfied, and I hope Insomniac continues their tradition of greatness as they go forward as well.
I'm glad you pointed that out. Yeah, we didn't put that in the show doc, but it is a big deal that he's and you know, you had a big impact when it takes three people to do your job when you leave, which, you know, it seems to be the case. Insomniac has elevated three people internally to be co-chairs, which is a pretty impressive compliment for Ted Price, who, you know, good on him. Go enjoy your life. Live.
Yeah. Yeah. The story I want to bring to the table for discussion, and we don't need to spend tons of time on it, but it's something near and dear to my heart. Extremely OK Games next game, Earthblade, has been canceled. Extremely OK, under the name Matt Makes Games before, developed Celeste. And now Maddie and her team had announced Earthblade. There was a Steam pre-order page or wishlist page. We had a trailer. I thought it looked awesome. And because of, it seems, difficulties in development, it is no longer going to be. There was some falling out between folks working on the game, but I think that's overstating it. I think it's more, they say they left on good terms, but I think developing something with a group of people is hard, and opinions often differ. And it seems like they did the best thing for everyone involved here and walked away while there were still friendships and professional relations to be salvaged. But as someone who loves Celeste and Towerfall, is that the other one?
Yeah.
I'm bummed to hear this because I thought Earthblade seemed ambitious and it certainly looked beautiful. I'm keeping it on my Steam wish list page just in case.
In memoriam.
Mm-hmm. But it seems like it is gone.
It is sad news. I think particularly sad because it means that whatever OK Games does or Extremely OK Games does next will be that much farther off, because it sounds like they're just now beginning the prototyping of whatever comes next. So it is really in the horizon at this point for any next project, because it sounds like they've scuttled a lot of work and the pixel artist that they've parted ways with, this Pedro Medeiros, has started working on a new game that they, you know, very kindly have pointed people toward. It's called Neverway. And they said that they've played, Maddie said she's played it, and it's very promising. So this is what's happened, is the pixel artist who had been working on Earthblade parted ways with Extremely OK Games and now is working on his new project. But whatever they work on next will be, you know, it's going to be years away, because they're literally just trying to figure out what comes after this. It's sad when these things happen. Luke, I'm sure you share in the sentiment that's kind of a bummer here.
It's a bummer. It's a downside whenever somebody can't make the game they want to make or have been working on and it can't hit release. We know it happens a lot. That doesn't make it fun or fun to cover, or I'm sure not enjoyable to be a part of. But it feels like in some ways this is an amicable exit. Yeah. on some level.
It does seem that way.
To that effect, I'm happy.
It's you know, it's different than most of these cancellations that come top down, right? This is from the developers themselves saying, we just couldn't make this work. We couldn't get it to happen, so we got to cancel this one.
Which is different. Maddie had a nice quote attributed saying, Celeste's success applied pressure on us to deliver something bigger and better with Earthblade. And that pressure is a large part of why working on it has become so exhausting. Mm-hmm. Pedro isn't to blame for this. In fact, the split with him has given us the clarity to see that we have lost our way and the opportunity to admit defeat. I feel many ways about it, but one big feeling is undoubtedly relief, she wrote in the announcement. Relief.
Yeah. Wow.
And we talk about this with Half-Life 3. We've talked about this with so many games in their next game, and Celeste was such a huge hit. I could only imagine the pressure they felt to deliver on their next thing. And the scope of Earthblade certainly seemed larger than what their prior games were.
My story of the week is another cancellation. This is different. This comes top down, as most of the cancellations we cover do. And this is interesting because we talked last week about, you know, all these reports of internal cancellations for Sony's much ballyhooed live service initiative. We heard last week about that reportedly God of War live service game that was canceled, and a couple of other live service games, just falling off the production schedule. This might fall in that category. This was the partnership that Sony had announced with NCSoft to make a Horizon MMO. NCSoft, of course, MMO specialists, they crank them out over there. And this was going to be set in the Horizon universe, and it was going to be a full MMO. It was announced back in 2022. Now this evidently, according to South Korean publication MTN, says it has been canceled and no longer happening. There is still that multiplayer Horizon project that Guerrilla Games was working on themselves, which has yet to be canceled. One hopes it won't be. But I thought a Horizon Universe MMO from NCSoft sounded pretty darn cool. And this is a bummer that is not happening. This was codenamed Project H. And it has
No, that's too obvious. Let's call it P Horizon.
Yeah. L Simpson. No. Lisa S. Yeah. Another bummer. I don't know how much more there is to say about that. Luke, I don't know if you were excited about as an Xbox gamer, I don't know if you're a big Horizon fan.
Again, I cover Xbox. I play games everywhere, right?
So as someone who's never played a game not on an Xbox console.
But I think I try to lead with that because too often content creators can pigeonhole themselves or be pigeonholed into not like I there were some dark times as an Xbox content creator and fan, but I really am disappointed with Sony as a mass in the last few years, because they created some of my most favorite and enjoyable single player experiences. And I regularly replay them, from God of War to Spider-Man. With Assassin's Creed Shadows coming out soonish, it's like, oh, Ghost of Tsushima, dare I? And when I see an MMO canceled, it doesn't sting the way a single player game or a smaller scope game might. It more frustrates me with leadership for saying, you know, as we said a few weeks ago, like a God of War MMO, what? You know, Horizon perhaps lended itself in universe a bit better, but still, this one doesn't sting. It's more like, what are you doing? I'm not trying to detach from the human loss of time or job or energy there. That is not the same frustration. Those are separate things. This does not sting. I'm glad an MMO in Horizon isn't necessarily the game that's being worked on. I would much rather, you know, single player esque experiences, but that can come off very callous if I'm not careful to preface it. And so I'm not trying to sound callous. I do want these people to have jobs and such. I do want more great games, but I'm just not looking forward to an MMO style game from some of these. I hope that comes across the way I intend it to.
Yeah, I think so. I understand. I mean, I think MMO is a very, it's a niche of a niche, right? It's for a very specific kind of gamer. And I am that gamer. I love a great MMO. And I love the Horizon universe. And I think this could have worked really well. I thought, you know, the way it's set up, even in the single player game, I think lends itself to a larger scope like this. But not to be. It'll be interesting to see if we ever actually see this Guerrilla Games multiplayer version of Horizon or not, if that is the next on the chopping block.
May I ask, Jeff?
Yeah.
You, as a fan of Horizon, mm-hmm. I feel like Horizon's been kicked in the shins every time.
Yeah.
Every time, right?
Yeah.
Breath of the Wild, Elden Ring, and then the Lego version that arrived on Switch wasn't necessarily well received or even among the best Lego games.
Yeah,
it feels like this franchise is ill-fated. As a fan, do you feel that way?
I hope not. It certainly seems that Sony has a lot of confidence in it, or has done. And maybe that's just because Herman Hulst has been elevated to a position where he can, you know, champion his former studio. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But, I think it has the tapestry that can grow really excellent game experiences. I think the fiction of that world, the look and feel, it is captivating to me. And I root for more, and hopefully the sales have justified that. You're right. It feels like it has been snake bit to a certain extent. I don't know if, you know, you got to look in the mirror at a certain point in Sony and be like, hey, maybe we move the release dates of these out of the way of some other big juggernauts. But I think it is still a top tier franchise for Sony, and I hope it remains that way. We shall see. All right, let's take another break for some sponsors, and then we'll be right back with our playlist, what we have been playing. All right, let's get into it. The games we have been playing on the playlist. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us on the playlist. Luke, very excited to have you on this week because I know that you got hands-on with Assassin's Creed Shadows, which got a slight delay in out of this crazy February, but it's still coming very soon. What did you think having played it?
Oh man, it was so we got a 4-hour preview, and I will politely plug. There's a video on Xbox Expansion Pass's channel, but we got a 4-hour preview, and the first 2 hours were prologue and story missions, and we're not to talk about that part. As far as like details and spoilers and the like. And then we got to from that prologue, which lasted 90 minutes ish or so, 2 hours, depending on how you took it. From there, you could then explore the world and you could tackle a story mission. You could go out and do your own thing. And I got to tell you guys, I left this preview more excited for an Assassin's Creed game than I have ever been.
Wow. Is that because you've not been a big fan of the franchise, or is it just that good?
Very fair question. For context, my favorite Assassin's Creed games have been Black Flag, Odyssey, and Origins. In no particular order there. Those are my three favorites. I didn't get into Valhalla. Mirage was the right time, like the scope of game, but it didn't click at the right time because of other releases. And so I'm very much a fan of Assassin's Creed, but it's really a matter of convenience and timing because Ubisoft has a formula. And if I've just played that formula somewhere else or in a different Ubisoft game, I don't always want to go back in. Acknowledging that, I think, gives listeners a fair take on like my approach to it. I went into Shadows knowing that Ubisoft is ripe in the news for a number of reasons, knowing that Shadows has received not one but two delays at this point, and I still exited my time from the preview thrilled. I think the highest compliment you can play a game is that you think about it when you're not playing it, and several hours and a full day removed from it, you know, like when you're putting together, they send you your footage and you're putting together your preview video, all I could think was that I just wanted to play more, which is a great testament. I feel I was cautious and nervous for how they would handle having a black man as a samurai in this world, and it didn't feel tokenized. I was curious how they would handle the two different characters and protagonists that you'll be using, one being a samurai in Yasuke, one being a shinobi, and they play very differently. The world was more beautiful than I've ever seen a Ubisoft world. Again, pretty high praise considering Avatar and Star Wars Outlaws and previous Assassin's Creed games. There were some things that I'm like, all right, Assassin's Creed, you're just doing that again. But I really did enjoy my time. I found that switching characters for different scenarios is the way to do it. As a diehard Arkham fan, the shinobi that Nahue plays, she was my style of choice, but some things called for a more brutish samurai approach. My one of my most favorite moments, and I was fortunate to have footage of it and capture it and put it into the video. I had Yasuke, big brooding samurai heavy. I climbed up on a roof as you would in any Assassin's Creed game. And so silly for me to not acknowledge this, but I'm like, obviously I'm going to be heavier as a character, more brutish. I went to go walk across a rope in a compound. That rope snapped right out from under me. Suddenly I'm in a world of hurt and I got wrecked. And it was a nice video game lesson to, hey, switch to Nahue. The shinobi, the Leith, the stealth, she would be much better suited for this. So I was really just pleased at the handling of those two characters, their culture, gender, and race elements of it in this world, but also their gameplay variations there, the purposes of having it all made sense, was well done, the voice acting immaculate. And I want to give a special call out to the hair and blood. Both of those things looked really good and can be very mishandled in games. Go back to culture, gender, etc. Hair could be a very difficult thing to get. It looked great. And then the blood and the lighting suited and changed with the sunlight, the moonlight, the season stuff. Like, seasons happen dynamically. Jeff, this was the coolest thing. I was walking along, looking at the sky, viewing God rays coming down from the sun through the trees. Shadows looked amazing. Then I looked to the right, and there's a storm front coming in. And as I approached and spoke to an NPC, that storm front rolled through, and raindrops came down and started pelting my armor. And it happened dynamically in world. It felt very alive. So I'm very high on it. Obviously, I think I sound like I'm heaping praise, and there's plenty of time till release and plenty of other things that may change. But this preview event made me want more of it. So cheers to that. Cheers to them, because I really enjoyed it.
You said your favorite Assassin's Creeds are Black Flag and Odyssey Origins. Which, I mean, those are two very different, I think, branches of the Assassin's Creed template. Which one would you compare Shadows to based on your hands-on with it?
Based on my time, probably Odyssey would be the closest, followed by Origins, and then a more distant Black Flag, just on account of the naval combat and the world. Right. I think I jumped off a building into a hay bale twice, you know, just, and that's, again, that could just be what I saw and what I experienced.
Yeah.
This was more Origins and Odyssey style for my liking, my taking, but for any audience member that maybe is extremely familiar with Assassin's Creed, I put little to no time into Valhalla, and that should be acknowledged because that's a very recent and very big game. So, you know, I just want that clear for anybody that's interested, because it is a preview event and things do change and such. But
it makes me excited. Odyssey is one of my favorite video games of all time. It has only grown in my estimation since I put 100 hours in that game.
Oh, nice.
I did every single thing you could do. I absolutely adored that experience. And it wasn't even my number one game of the year that year, because God of War was. But it has only grown in my estimation in the years since. I think about the game all the time. I want that experience again, and I hope that Shadows will capture me in the same way. But man, I'm getting really hyped hearing your excitement around it. I want that game to grab me like Odyssey did. Once again, and I think certainly the setting is as intriguing to me as Greece was. I'm really looking forward to it. What else is on your playlist?
Let's see. I've been playing a lot of Marvel Rivals, a game that I did not expect to get into, and I know you guys have talked about it on the show before, but really loving Marvel Rivals. I'm a superhero guy. Like, that is just my thing. I love superheroes. Really enjoying Rivals and the depth that it has that I didn't expect it to have. I think anybody on the outside looking in would have said that's a knockoff of Overwatch. And while there is certainly the same genre, a lot of elements to it, it does so many things right that Overwatch has missed or gotten wrong or strayed from, that I'm really having a good time with it. They're doing like little in-game events. They're doing like mini games style, separate setting type things. Some of them are very good. Some of them I think are atrocious, but the core gameplay of Rivals has brought a lot of layered fun with so many characters out the gate and more on the way. So I'm having a blast with that one. And then also recently in the last month, I finished up reviews for the MetaQuest 3 and then the Steam Deck. And that brought me back to my favorite franchise of all time, which is the Arkham series. And so to review the MetaQuest 3, of course, Arkham Shadow is the game to check out. And it's the one that they're touting. And then from there, reviewing the Steam Deck, I went through three different Arkham games, Blackgate, City, and Knight. Knight being my favorite game of all time. And I'm just having a blast enjoying it that way. And so the reason I bring that up, even though it's probably not the new, latest, and greatest, is that sometimes it's great to go back to what you know you love. Sure. And just feel good and immerse in that. And so that's been a good time.
Awesome. Great. And they play great on the Steam Deck?
Oh, yes. Goodness gracious. For me, the VR and the Steam Deck both were realms that I had not experienced in modern times, right? Like, I loved my Vita, loved my Switch at launch, but I hadn't really gone into handhelds, and I'd never experienced VR despite listening to your show for many years. It was my first VR entryway. And so it was great to see just the games and franchises I love be accessible in those ways. So that was fun.
Cool. Well, maybe we'll get a little deeper into VR a little later in the show. But good stuff. Good stuff for your playlist. Christian Spicer, I know you've been playing a bunch of stuff this week as well. Where do you want to start?
I've been playing a lot. We have a little bit of overlap, so I'll save those maybe for the end. But I will start with Lonely Mountains Snow Riders, which is also available on, depending on your tier of Game Pass.
This is that blocky looking sort of snowboarding game, right? It looks like almost Minecrafty, blocky kind of retro look, right?
Your character does. The environments do not. The environments are beautiful, snowy mountains. It is the follow-up to Lonely Mountain Downhill. Downhill Mountain?
Yeah.
Whatever that one is. You're on a mountain bike. And physics-based crashing hilarity ensues. And Lonely Mountain Snow Riders is very much a continuation of that, but also less lonely. you can go with other people, both online and I believe on couch. I have not done on couch yet. My could not get my kids into playing with me, unfortunately, in time for this show. So I think you can do on couch, but I don't know. Don't quote me on it. In this game, like Lonely, the first one, the biking, I'll say BMX, but it's not BMX. The mountain biking game is a lot of you failing. And I think depending on how okay you are with that will determine your level of enjoyment with this game. It has a tutorial at the start where it tries to best guess how you want your control scheme to be implemented. And I think it's a really smart way of having that happen. There are two modes. One is basically you're kind of following the character, and the other is more akin to tank controls, where up is always up or right is always your character's right, no matter which way the camera is. Because in this game, as you're going down the mountain, it will have the camera will spin, and while you'll start, the camera's kind of behind you, and then as you go down, at some point, you know, you might be coming into the camera. And so how does your stick control affect your character? Different people are going to like it a different way. Playing both ways, carrying over, you could change it in the mountain biking game too, but not as many people did. I carried over that control scheme initially, the default Lonely Mountain Downhill control scheme, into Snow Riders, but then I also wanted to try the other one, and I still crashed a lot with both. So neither one of these control schemes, I think, changes the core makeup of the game, which is a lot of physics-based failures. You know, you're going down the mountain, you're learning a course for the first time, you're going to fall a lot.
Right.
But there is a Zen mode. There are moments where you can just explore the mountains, where if you're not looking to have the competitive part of the game of getting down in a certain amount of time or hitting these checkpoints or things like that, there are other things to do. And so, Jeff, while you're correct that the characters are kind of this very blocky, polygonal look, the game itself is absolutely gorgeous. It gives off those Zen vibes when you're kind of just doing that explore mode of, you know, feeling like you're kind of just hanging out. And especially with a couple of other people on the mountain, you can just kind of it's a really great golf game in that regard. The challenge level, I got frustrated pretty quick as I couldn't quite grok. It had been a while since I'd played the mountain biking game, and I wasn't able to click right back into the controls. So I think for me, that's the biggest takeaway as to whether or not you will love this game is whether or not you click with one of the control schemes or not. If you do, I think you're going to have tons of fun. If you don't, and you're not willing to put in that time, I think it might be more frustrating than it is fun for you.
That's kind of the thing, though. This is like a throwback to like Trials, right? It's all about this sort of non-intuitive control scheme that if you master it, you can get really, really good. But it's all about beating your head against the wall on the way to that. Like that's the kind of the hook for the whole thing, right?
Yeah, I mean, the control scheme isn't non-intuitive per se. It's just, like they said, there's options to try to make it as intuitive as you want it to be. But you are going downhill, and if you don't have the course memorized, or if you haven't figured out the shortcut you're trying to take, you're going to crash into a tree because you're trying to go faster than you otherwise would. So I think it's more the feature of the game is physics-based obstacle avoiding, you pressing your luck under those controls, than the controls themselves trying to be difficult for difficult's sake.
Gotcha. That's Lonely Mountains Snow Riders on Christian's playlist. What else you got?
It is out right now. The next game I want to talk about, oh my goodness. Here we are at the beginning of the year, and I have my first game on my list. My first game on my list that will maybe make it into my top five. Tokyo Extreme Racer is out now in early access. Between this and Ninja Gaiden 2 Black, I feel like I am going back in time to when games were just, not that games aren't fun now, but just simple. You know, it's like, you're just diving in. And that's not to say there's not progression and perks and unlocks and car customization and all that stuff. But Tokyo Extreme Racer, I believe the last one of this franchise was 20 years ago, 15 years ago, a long time ago. But this franchise for me harkens back to the Dreamcast era, that style of racing game. You're bombing around the freeways around Tokyo, and every race is a 1v1 match against another street racer. Tokyo Extreme Racer 2025 is built in Unreal Engine 5. It looks great. And it's still that same concept where you're driving around these freeways around Tokyo at night and you come across a rival, you flash your lights at them, and then you're racing. You're racing on these freeways, and how far in front of your rival you are, they have like a health bar and it depletes, and that's how you'll then win. There's not a finish line. It's just staying in front of them for long enough or keeping them from being in front of you. You can kind of, if you get right on their bumper and ride their bumper, that's an attack, and that kind of drains a certain part of their energy. Same if they do that to you or if they kind of veer you into other traffic. It's not burnout, but there is some, you know, maneuvering and rubbing and stuff like that in the game. And man, I miss this style of racing game. It is just so fun to be back on these freeway courses that have existed in Gran Turismo, certainly, and other games since then. But there's something about them that you're not doing a ton of hairpin turns. You know, you're not doing a 180. There's not a sharp technical S turn the way Laguna Seca has if you're on these real world tracks. You're on a freeway, and freeways aren't known for making you turn a hard hairpin left out of nowhere. But there's oncoming, there's traffic that you're avoiding, and still long sweeping tunnels that you're going through. And your rival is trying to rub right on you to take away the line that you have. And in between the races, when you're not going against a rival, you're just kind of cruising on these freeways. And what I think Tokyo Extreme Racer has always done really well is capture the essence of driving at night and just that feeling of being in a zen place, which I think this franchise has done really well, again, whatever it was, 20, 25 years ago. And now of going from this zen hangout, you're listening to great music, you're in a car that you've customized that you love, driving through this really cool city, to then flipping a switch and now you're racing. And that on again, off again energy switch I find super compelling. And if you lose a race and it's frustrating, you're immediately back in kind of that zen place of just cruising around the freeways, looking for the next target that you're going to try to take down, going back to the garage, tweaking settings, trying to change this aspect of your car to give you a little bit of an edge before you have to spend a ton of money and maybe upgrade the engine or something like that. I really, really love this game. It has a Toyota GR86 in it, which I am a big fan, and I take to the track IRL as well. So it's always fun to see those cars represented. I love them. They're a fun little rear-wheel drive sports car. And in early access, this game feels super complete. I imagine there'll be more cars. I imagine there will be more rivals. But as an early access game, I can already highly recommend it, and I'm very excited to see what the full, you know, 1.0 release brings. But if you are looking for that Dreamcast PlayStation 2 era style game that is arcadey, you know, it is not Gran Turismo physics or anything like that, man, oh man, Tokyo Extreme Racer just absolutely nails it. Nails it.
Wow.
You said cool. Early access on Steam, you mean?
Yes, yeah. It's currently only on PC. They have talked about console plans, but there's no console release announced yet, unfortunately.
Gotcha. But it does run on Steam Deck. And on Steam Deck, you're running pretty much everything in low. And I don't hate it because it kind of just makes it feel more like a Dreamcast game. You know, like the core game is still there and then the mm-hmm. graphics toned down. It still works very well in a part down graphic approach as well. It's still, you can see everything you need to see on track and the cars still look great and stuff like that. It's very, very cool. Tokyo Extreme Racer.
I'm looking at it on Steam. It's a Steam Deck is where I play Steam. So worth it if I'm just a Steam Deck person at $30 or should I hold off?
I mean, there's plenty to play, so I would wait for 1.0 unless you're a JDM car sicko like I am, and you're looking to get back in an RX-7 or an old Torino or something like that and go cruising through Tokyo freeways. If you're that person, then yes, I recommend it, but otherwise wait for 1.0 and see what else comes out when it fully launches.
Gotcha. Sounds good. Right. Thanks, man.
That is Tokyo Extreme Racer. Christian, what else is on your playlist?
Do you want to jump in first? I've only played the demo of Eternal Strands. I think you've been playing the full game.
We've
both been playing Ninja Gaiden 2 Black. Where would you like
to start? Let's talk about Ninja Gaiden 2 Black, because I feel like you are going to have more to say about that game than I am. I dabbled. I played it for maybe an hour after it dropped, just reminding myself what these games were like and having a good time, being like, oh, yes. I don't know. It feels like a long time since I've played a game that felt like this. Maybe I'm exaggerating. Maybe I haven't been aware of games that have been doing this stuff. But this felt like such a throwback to a style of challenging third-person action game. I said it, you know, when we were talking about the Developer Direct. It's just like the only way to do these kinds of games now feels like doing the Souls-like thing. And it's like, no. Somebody had figured out how to do this differently when it was fast and you didn't have to worry about a stamina bar. And it really was just reacting and knowing your combos and knowing, you know, dealing with lots of enemies on the screen at once and doing it really quickly and not having to relent. Like that's, I know I'm such a child, but that's part of the thing that bums me out about Souls-likes is like the having to wait so much, wait till my stamina bar replete, wait till the animation is done. Because I like that in Ninja Gaiden, I don't have to wait for anything. I'm a ninja. Dang it. I'm jumping in. I'm going for it. Anyway, what is your take on Ninja Gaiden 2 Black?
I'm maybe 2-3 hours into the game because I've been extreme racing still. I started this week being like, oh, Tokyo Extreme. I think I want to say how many hours I am to Tokyo Extreme Racer, which just came out, I think maybe 24 hours before we're sitting down to record. And then Ninja Gaiden 2 Black dropped and I was like, oh man, I'm going back to the dorm in a big way. This is exactly the vibe I want right now. And so for folks that are really into the Ninja Gaiden franchise or were before, Ninja Gaiden 2 Black feels like it is Ninja Gaiden 2 Sigma or Sigma 2. I forget where they put the Sigma. The Sigma version of the game, but with gore added back.
Tons Some of the stuff, of gore.
Tons of gore. Some of the stuff from the original Ninja Gaiden 2 added back. But this is not a full Ninja Gaiden 2, we forget Sigma ever happened. Approach, which I think for some people, they'll be bothered by that. For me, Sigma was not this affront to the franchise that some people make it out to be. I understand the gripes, but I didn't personally experience them. I never played it on the hardest level where I needed, you know, whatever it was, the flaming shuriken to be able to pull off the thing to do the thing. So I like this approach. I also think the showcase maybe undersold it for how much of a remake or remaster or whatever that definition is. I mean, this is completely rebuilt from the ground up.
It looks exactly how I remember it.
It definitely looks how you remember it.
It looks exactly how I remember it, which is inaccurate.
That's what we want from a remake, right?
Well, yeah, no, it is objectively way better looking than it ever has looked on Xbox 360. And yet my memory is like, it doesn't look like they improved anything.
Gotcha.
It's just the lie that your brain tells you of like, that's how I remember it looking. But it is much prettier than it ever was.
Go pull up a side by side if you're feeling that
it
way.
It needs that button though. It needs the button so I can go. Oh right, yeah. The Combat Evolved button where it's like, oh yeah, they did a lot of work.
To Luke's point, it does do what you want it to do in the sense that it feels and plays like you want it to. Right? It's not like, and now it's behind the shoulder third person close combat. It's
the
same
game. Yes,
it is the game. And I think folks have been doing this. You know, the Bayonetta franchise has certainly tried it. DMC and Devil May Cry have versions of it. And then a game I was very excited for, but ultimately did not live up to its potential, I think, or deliver on its promise, was Wanted Dead, which I believe had the same one of the character designers, I think, is from the Ninja Gaiden. It's been too long since I've played Wanted
Dead. I interviewed him.
Okay. Yeah. Great. And that game did a lot of what, you know, tried to be a new Ninja Gaiden. And I think, unfortunately, Wanted Dead didn't quite take the torch and run with it. But folks have been trying, and now getting this back again, I think this game nails it. Jeff, as you mentioned earlier, and Luke, to your concern, there's like a story mode that you can play just right out the gate. It's gorgeous. It doesn't make any sense. You know, like, I need to find this ninja. Where is he? He's here. Well, now you're going to hell. Spoiler.
I have 400 other ninjas to attack him.
Yeah. And we're all on this roof in this city where no one knows we're here. And P.S. now we're back in hell.
Yeah.
And then you're really in hell when you fight your way up the staircase. Take that, Daredevil Netflix show. Ninja Gaiden 2 has the best / worst staircase fight that I can remember. But I'm absolutely loving this game. And between Ninja Gaiden 2 Black and Tokyo Extreme Racer, I am a very, very happy boy right now, Jeff.
It's nostalgia boy.
So good.
Yeah. It's fun. It's super fun. And as Luke pointed out, what a great gift to Game Pass subscribers. Because like, oh, you just get this cool thing. If you've never played a Ninja Gaiden, give it a shot. Especially if you have Game Pass on a certain tier. Because it's not, I don't know. I agree with you. It's not completely dead, this style of game, but it really does feel like most people aren't playing games like this anymore. And it just feels different to me.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Eternal Strands, because I'm loving this game. Loving this game. This was completely out of left field for me. Wasn't super on my radar. I saw all the trailers as they were hyping it up. It didn't seem like something that was going to captivate me. And I have really, really been enjoying my time with Eternal Strands. First of all, the look of the game, it's got this kind of Saturday morning cartoon style to it. The cutscenes are hand animated, or I don't know if they were actually hands, but they look like old Cell animation from Saturday morning cartoons. And then the world itself has this kind of painterly, beautiful, beautiful look. Actually reminds me of Wayfinder that we were just talking about the last couple of weeks. That similar aesthetic where it's very bright, colorful, painterly. I think the game's gorgeous. I like being in the world. I like, it's got a lot of anthropomorphized animal characters. I like the 2D, you know, when you're talking to your team, it's got these really wonderful drawings, these 2D drawings of their portraits. I just love being in the world. And the whole hook of this game is, yes, you've got swords and shields. Yes, you've got bows and arrows. Yes, you've got traditional weapons. But primarily the thrust of what you can do is you have magical powers that are all physics-based, that interact with each other in really interesting ways, and that you can combo. You know, you can levitate things and throw them. You've got fire and ice. More to come, I'm sure. I have not unlocked the whole game. I'm pretty early on still, but
yeah, there's already a pretty big wheel you see even in the demo when you go to change it, and it's like I have things that are like here and here, and I'm like, oh, that's definitely gonna fill in as the game goes on.
I think they've shown stuff in some of the trailers of the, you know, higher level magical abilities you get, but there's lots of crafting in the game as well, and it's just a really fun physics sandbox of I grab this, you know, there's an enemy standing on a bridge. I'll just lift the bridge up and throw it at them or with them, you know, picking up boulders and rocks and trees and casting them around, setting fire to things, you know, comboing ice melting so that they are like, you know, ice blocking is what I meant to say. Ice blocking them so they can't move, and then running up and slashing them with my sword. You know, coming up with really fun combos. And also your, you know, your power increases in the game, so you'll be able to lift larger things and do more stuff. I really like how this game feels. It's cool that they kind of underpower the traditional combat stuff, even though hacking and slashing and bow and arrows is still fun in the game, I think. What really is the power level that you've got is your magic. And it's so fun comboing those things. And I always feel like I'm improvising in fights of, oh, I'll just use this and do that. And now I have this cool idea and it all works. It's fun just tossing people off of cliffs and stuff like that. Really fun. I'm curious if you're as high on this game as I am.
I love that you're loving it. As I was playing it, I was like, ooh, I think this game might really connect with Jeff. It is also coming to certain tiers of Game Pass when it comes out. So if it also wasn't on your radar and is now, it's this month, soon, a couple days, I think, the full release or the public release for Eternal Strands. And it's doing a lot of Breath of the Wild, modern Zelda-like,
yes,
where, you know, not only can you freeze an enemy, but also, whoopsie, that enemy was in a lake and you froze them. And right, now that lake is freezing you and you're taking damage because the green grass grows all around and around. It's like very much that like style. Yeah.
Fire spreads. It definitely, you're right to point out, it is very much inspired by Breath of the Wild. You can also have a little stamina
climb
bar.
Anything.
You can climb any surface. You know, you've got that level of kind of world traversal that was popularized in Breath of the Wild as well.
There's a fire on an enemy who touches a tree, who falls on a field of grass, who comes up to another enemy that comes to you, and then to the end you're just like, oh no, this is chaos I did not mean to bring.
Right.
I love all of that. I also love the visual style, as you mentioned. It is gorgeous. It very much reminds me of Wayfinder, and also kind of what if WoW but today.
Yeah.
Kind of graphical approach. In motion, it looks better than I think it does in screenshots. There's really cool, like the dust plumes seem animated, you know? So there's like stuff like that that is a different style, but it's still cohesive. It's intentional.
Wile E. Coyote dust plumes.
Yes. Yeah. Which I really like. Our opinions differ some on, I think the cartoon animated stuff feels not quite there for me. I think the game is so beautiful. I wish they kind of just kept me in engine, because I really love how the characters look in the game, and I don't like being taken out of that as much. And I really hope this game connects with a lot of people, and I hope that there is a lot of experimentation that happens and fun social clips of people pulling off these zany physics-based, magic-based things. For me, I feel like it's missing a certain level of polish, unfortunately. Like nothing about the combat fully clicked. And using the powers, it felt like I can't wait for their next game. Is how I feel about Eternal Strands right now. I love the swing. I love the graphics. I love the world, and I hope they iterate on it. I hope we get Assassin's Creed 2. And from what I've played, I think I played like an hour of the demo. It's not quite there yet, in my opinion.
Well, I'm having a blast with it. I think I'm going to be playing a lot more of this game. And I'll probably talk about it more in future weeks. It's Eternal Strands, and I think it's just coming out right about now. All right. I know we're pushing up against it. Luke is hard out, but I really would love to talk a little bit of VR. Virtual reality. Luke, you said you just did a review of the MetaQuest 3 and got a chance to play a number of games there. You want to, you know, summarize your feelings, or tell me what the sort of top experiences that you played were?
Absolutely. So when I saw, flashback to summer of 2024, when I saw that the next Arkham game was going to be VR only, my heart broke. I was devastated. I was very sad because I don't have VR, or I did not have VR. I was not a VR person, as much as it looked cool. Like the idea of it being wired never really clicked for me. And this is the coolest story, Jeff. We were at the YouTube theater had exited. We left Summer Game Fest. We were out there just in the parking lot talking to people. I saw a guy with an Arkham shirt and walked up to him. No clue who he was. I was like, excuse me, are you on the Arkham team? He said, yes. I was like, hey, I just want you to know Arkham is my favorite franchise of all time. I appreciate you making games in that world. And he said, oh, are you going to get Shadow? I was like, respectfully, I don't have a VR headset. No, thank you. I said, I don't have a headset. Probably not right away. Just probably not happening. But to see Arkham live on is fantastic. The context being quietly, like Suicide Squad wasn't an Arkham game, right? In the verse. And he said, what's your name? And I was like, my name's Luke. He goes, I'm sending you a VR headset. Turns out the person I tapped on the shoulder was Ryan Payton, the head of the studio.
He's the best. Idea.
He's the nicest human being on the planet. He sent me a MetaQuest 3S, and I fell in love with VR, Jeff. I fell in love. I thought of you guys.
You hear that, Ryan? That's all you have to do. Keep mailing them out, buddy.
What a cool thing for him to follow up on. Wow. Amazing.
I fell in love with VR. I bought a MetaQuest 3, gave the 3S, because it was given to me, to a teacher, single father guy that is just great dude, and ended up reviewing the 3, loved it, recommend it to everybody. The idea of it being standalone, the number of experiences you can get, fantastic. What I found is that the 3S, wonderful piece of tech. The 3 there, if you've got the money to spend it, both were fantastic. And since then, he also sent me Iron Man VR. Really enjoyed that one. Also very cool from Camouflage. And since then, I've spent hundreds of dollars in VR, falling in love with this world, falling in love with it. Arizona Sunshine Remake, fantastic. I have Behemoth on my unit. I haven't played it yet just because I've been so busy, but I'm excited to. I just truly love VR, and I'm grateful to Ryan. I don't know if he ever listens, but grateful to him for the chance to experience Arkham and how great it was, to experience VR and how great it was, and to see my favorite franchise in a new medium. So cool.
You're right. Great story. We had obviously we talked to Ryan a while back about the success of Arkham Shadow right before it won the Game Award. And you know, just can't wait to see what Camouflage does next. He's a great guy. They are great people. Your story is a testament to that. Really cool stuff. I'm glad you're a part of the club. Welcome to the dawn, as I like to say. I'll add another game to your list. I've been playing a couple of great VR games. I'm not going to have time to talk about both, so I'll just pick one, and I'll talk about the other next week or beyond. But I want to talk about Human Within, or maybe it's The Human Within. This is a game I played on MetaQuest 3, standalone, not streaming from my PC. I really like this game. I think it is perhaps not quite – I think its ambition outstrips its ability to achieve it, but it's still worth checking this game out. This is – I think closer to an interactive movie than a pure video game. It uses full motion video, which is a controversial thing for some. For me, I think it's pretty neat, and especially neat the way they do it. The idea here is that this is a sort of futuristic sci-fi story where this woman is comatose, and they have this methodology to access her brain with this, you know, this interface. You play as her. And so the game uses a lot of different techniques to achieve that. One of which is you're watching fully 3D video, which is awesome. And I think very high quality and well captured. So it's not grainy. It doesn't look bad. It looks good on the headset. So you're watching a fully 3D scene with human actors acting out in a set, you know, doing a scene. Then sometimes it will put you in this sort of CG world, this interface that is sort of you in the headset, in the technology that they put, you know, this comatose woman in. And so you are still – you're interfacing with all these computers in the city or in the facility you're in. And so it'll have like 2D windows that are hanging in 3D space, but that are all different – you know, like security cameras and stuff are around the city or around the place. And so you can swivel your head and check out all these different things. And you're watching the actors from the 3D scenes do certain things. And it's really, really cool to transition from a fully 3D single view to like this multi, like you're, you know, minority reporting and looking at all these different cameras at once to convey the story. Then it also will put you into fully, you know, video game world mini games where it'll like envelop the whole world. No longer are you looking at full motion video. Now you're in a CG environment and you have to do mini games like matching symbols and unlocking things. And it's sort of this, you know, cyber world where you have to unlock things or fix a data leak or whatever it is. So you, because you are this woman in this interface, you have the ability to manipulate the machines in a way that people can't. Super slick idea. Execution is like 80% to home run. You know, it's a triple, I think, or at least a standing double. You know what I mean? It's hard to pull off great full motion video. You know, you're not going to be seeing the actors who are famous, but I think the acting is pretty solid. It's some uneven, but I think that format is tough for actors because you're not acting the same way. The player can look wherever they want to look at any time. And so it's a little more like doing theater. Anyway, it's a little uneven is what I'll say. For the most part, serviceable. For the most part, pretty cool. And I wish the mini games were a little more interesting. I wish there was a little more to do. But man, The Human Within, really worthwhile effort. And is an example of what I talk about with VR, which is don't just make another game that I could play in 2D, right? Show me something that could only work with this technology. That is what I'm so excited about with VR is games that, yes, you could do a version of this game in 2D, but it wouldn't really be this game. This experience is reliant on the virtual space. And I find those kinds of things really exciting. It feels like people are thinking about VR in new, different ways and what it unlocks as a technology to provide new kinds of game experiences. And that's what this feels like to me. So I'm pretty high on it, even though I recognize it wasn't a complete home run on every level. And I think, you know, you have to be really willing to meet this game on its own terms and understand you're playing a interactive movie. There are certain things where it does a little choose your own adventure style, like do this or do that. And I'm not 100% certain that those choices really have a huge impact, as big of an impact as one might hope for. But I think the scale of this game is small enough that you can kind of understand why that would be the case. Anyway, The Human Within, I think, you know, Luke, you should check it out. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, no, I put it on the list, man. That's awesome.
All right. That's going to do it for this episode of DLC. We do have parting gifts coming up, so stick around for those. But Luke, Lore, thank you for being with us. Really fun chatting with you.
I appreciate the invite, man. Thank you for having me. It's special when you see Jeff Cannata's name pop up in your mentions. So that was cool, man. Thank you.
You hear that, Christian? It's special.
I didn't hear it. I wasn't listening.
Luke, tell folks where they can keep up with you and the cool stuff that you do online.
Absolutely. So for anyone that enjoyed my voice on here and you're anxious to check out some of the work I do, I host a podcast called the Xbox Expansion Pass, which is on all your podcast services and, of course, on YouTube. Because Xbox is expanding its coverage, we're expanding our coverage. So reviews for things like the MetaQuest 3, reviews for things like the Steam Deck, and places where Xbox games are now available have become something that we have adopted. I also work to do previews and interviews as well. And it's been a very busy time of late. I just previewed Assassin's Creed Shadows, as you heard me mention. But also in the wake of that very impressive Xbox Direct, where Doom the Dark Ages was shown, I was fortunate to interview legendary game designer John Romero, which I was taken aback by. The timing could not have been better. We've been talking for 6 months at this point. And then the idea to land it on the day of the Direct, wonderful, because I got to have his thoughts on his legacy, the Doom franchise, the direction of the Doom franchise. So I'll ask anybody to please go check those out. And as a parting thought, if you enjoy content creators, just as we support game developers by purchasing their games, if you're able to support them, content creators, by sharing, liking, and all of the other methods they're in, please do so, because it means a lot to us.
Awesome. Very cool. Christian Spicer, what about you? What do you got going on this week?
It's Girl Scout cookie season is what I have going on this week. My house is going to be converted into a Girl Scout cookie warehouse as my wife is cookie chair for multiple troops. We rent a U-Haul, go pick them up at distro. Then we become a mini distro. All the kids' troops come over here to pick up all their cookies to deliver. I'm happy to share my children's links with people if they're interested, maybe the Discord, or you can hit me up on Blue Sky, or you can email us at dlcfeedback@gmail.com if you are so inclined. My kids are both raising money for Eaton Canyon Fire Relief here in Los Angeles with their troops. But I will also say, if you have a local scout, support them and find a local scout who is supporting a cause that you like and support them. If you don't have one, my children would be happy to ship cookies to you wherever you are. But support your local Girl Scout. It is cookie season, so be on the lookout for that. That honestly, Jeff, that's my week. And then
what's the best cookie, Christian? What's the best Girl Scout cookie?
Samoa.
Yes, you are correct. You passed Hands the down. Test.
Hands down.
You passed the test.
But they have no new cookies this year, and it's also the last year to get the Girl Scout S'more. They say they're discontinuing the Girl Scout S'more cookie, which is a solid
S'enough.
They've had S'enough, yeah. The Girl Scout S'more is a solid Dunkin' cookie. You know, you want to dunk it in, you want to Oreo it. You know, you want to dunk it in some milk. But
if only they could make S'more.
They can't though. They can't. They can't do it. What about you, my friend? What's going on?
Well, same old for me. That means there's other shows for you to check out, including the Film Cast, where I talk about movies and TV shows. We Have Concerns, the comedy science show I do. And, of course, the Book Club, where Lana and I get together and talk about the Malazan Book of the Fallen. My goodness, was it a fun week, because we got, once again, the opportunity to chat with the author of the Malazan Book of the Fallen, Steven Erickson, who is just the coolest. He is my actual idol. I idolize him. He is brilliant and generous and smart. And I already said brilliant. I don't know. He's the greatest. I want to be him. Just a decent, lovely human being who has lived an incredible life and continues to make incredible art. And you get to see us talk about him. It's full of spoilers for the book, but what a great guy. So check out those books and watch it. You can find it on my YouTube channel, youtube.com/KanataJeff. Or listen to the audio by being a patron. All right, let's wrap the show up now with our parting gifts.
Hey, give us a suggestion of what to do this week. Give us a parting gift. This is your parting gift.
Luke Lohr, do you have a suggestion to help people get through their week?
Yeah, my wife and I have been enjoying The Penguin on Max. It's been a really good time. It takes a long time for Matt Reeves to make content. We really enjoyed The Batman. Of course, I'm a superhero fan, but I've been watching The Penguin and it's been a really good time. And I hope people do check that one out. The acting is phenomenal. I can't believe it's Colin Farrell. I forget the person who plays his counterpart in there, but just incredible, incredible acting and filmography and cinematography. And so credit to The Penguin. That's been a great parting gift for me. I want to pass that on.
Very cool. That's The Penguin. It is on Max, the one to watch for HBO.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Christian Spicer, what is your parting gift?
Gonna plug a friend's podcast. Also, it's, you know, kind of a self plug, but it's a parting gift. But our friends of the show, Chris Bergman and his gaming studio, Guiley Games, they have a podcast, Guiley and Friends. You know that I love hearing from developers. I love the developer interviews we do on this show. I'm very proud of the official The Last of Us podcast. And I love the stuff that Double Fine has done, where they open their doors to folks and you get to see how the sausage is made, so to speak. And Guiley and Friends is that. They're an indie game studio. They making Rah Rah Boom, a brawler that I was fortunate to write on that I think is very fun and very cool. I can't wait for more people to play it, for it to come out. And they talk about the creative process, the challenges, the highs, the lows, and also just some silly shenanigan good times. They have guests on from across the industry. I love getting the curtain peeled back. And I think Guiley and Friends is a fun show from friend of our show, Chris Bergman and crew, putting it out there. So folks, they're interested in, you know, what it takes to build a game studio and to build games, I think they do a good job showcasing that.
That's great. I got to check this out. I wasn't aware of that. That's really cool. Guiley and Friends podcast, wherever you get podcasts. My parting gift is a show that my wife and I have been binging on Apple TV Plus. It's called Bad Sisters. This is from Sharon Horgan, who I love, and it seems like whatever she touches, I love. It's a show that I did not jump on because it didn't look like something I was going to love. So the first season is pretty old now, a few years old now, but second season, we just started second season, finished first season. Did I say the title of it? It's called Bad Sisters. Bad Sisters. It's a show about a number of sisters who decide that one of the husbands of the sisters needs to die. So they conspire to try to murder the husband. He is a real piece of work. The show does not hold back in making him vile and make you hope that he gets murdered.
And it's a streaming show, so they don't need to hold back. There's always those shows you're like, oh yeah, this isn't on cable even. This is a streaming show.
but it's fun because a lot of the show is they try to kill him and he doesn't get killed, which is very fun. I found this very, very delicious watching. You know, it's great, you know, late stage streaming type of show where you kind of love the taboo of it all. But there's also some really great performances. It had us guessing until the end. It's great. I really enjoy it. I can't wait to see what they do with season two, because we just started season two this last week. Bad Sisters on Apple TV Plus. All right. We also got a listener suggested parting gift. This was sent to us at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. It comes from Adrian. Adrian says, this one is a bit old, but hopefully it can bring some much needed laughter to fans of the Uncharted series. It's a video on YouTube called Uncharted Drake's Quarantine, where Nolan North hosts a Zoom call with the main cast of Uncharted 3 and Amy Hennig. It's not exactly kid-friendly, featuring jokes about Richard McGonagall, Sully in the games, being a serial killer and other shenanigans one would expect from Nolan. It brightened my otherwise cold and gloomy morning, and I hope it's something that can get you through your week. Have a fantastic 11th year of DLC, Adrian. Thanks, Adrian. Christian, have you seen this before?
I have. And again, I love it. It's fun, but also there are, like, you know, you get insight along the way, which I think is well done. It's the lemonade out of the lemons that were so many of those quarantine years, you know.
Indeed. Indeed. Thank you so much, Adrian, for sending that in. If you'd like to have your parting gift read on our show, send it to us. dlcfeedback@gmail.com is where you do that. And that's going to do it for this episode of DLC. Thanks again to Luke Lohr and Christian Spicer for hanging out with me. Thanks to our musical contributors, Patrick L., Sean Madigan, and Zero Star for those fun bumpers. Our theme song was composed by White Q, which is Jason Sherry and T. Ryan Arnold. You can always get merch for our show by visiting our store, store.dlcpod.com. Of course, our hugest, biggest, most emphatic thanks are reserved for our patrons at patreon.com/dlcpod. Thank you, patrons. You are the only reason we get to keep making these. If you're listening and you'd like to see this show continue and you have a little extra scratch to hand our way, of course, if it puts you into financial hardship, we wouldn't want you to support the show. But if you can, consider all the cool perks you get and the fact that the show benefits. Patreon.com/DLCpod. All right, we'll see you next week. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.